You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, and welcome to the last, probably the last, episode of the Conference USA Underdog Dynasty podcast of the year. Diving into the CUSA Championship, among many other things on this episode. Joe Londrigan and Eric Henry here with you once again. Eric, as we're recording this, we're just a couple days out from Christmas, and it kind of feels like Christmas, but obviously with everything that's gone into 2020, it's a little bit of a different feel this year.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I think the big thing, and first off, I will echo the sentiments of my fine co-host, Joe Londrigan. Hope everyone's having, you know, happy holidays out there. And by the time you will hear this, your holidays will at least be past as far as the Hanukkah and Christmas and everything else. But yeah, just with the unsurety of being able to gather with your loved ones and all that jazz, you know, definitely, It feels a little odd for those people who, you know, typically that's a staple of their holiday season. Definitely sucks. And hopefully we can get past this 2020, put it to bed, put it to rest behind us. And 2021 will be a resumption of normal activities around the holidays.
Absolutely. But in the meantime, hopefully some college football can make things feel a little bit more normal for the holiday season. And first off, let's start with talking about UAB once again claiming the Conference USA title. They beat Marshall in the championship game 22-13, jumped out to a 9-0 lead. Marshall kind of made it interesting at the end. Xavier Gaines caught a 70-yard pass from Grant Wells in the fourth to make it 15-13, but UAB bounced right back to make it 22-13, put enough distance between them and the Thundering Herd to win that game. My initial thoughts here, you know, it's strange to see Marshall not really have it put together in the first half, especially given what we've come to expect out of guys like Brandon Knox and Grant Wells. But at least defensively, UAB just looked like the more prepared team. And then, of course, you got to give it up for Tyler Johnson, 12 of 22, 252 yards and two touchdowns through the air for the Blazers. And then, of course, Spencer Brown, workhorse, 30 carries for 149 yards on the ground. So, I mean, it really was an entertaining game, and Marshall gave it a little bit of a run at the end, but ultimately just wasn't enough. And Bill Clark wins his second Conference USA title in 2 years.
I'm going to come back to the Blazers in a second. I'm going to start with Marshall. Just a couple things that jumped out to me as I was watching this game. It feels like, and once again, it's always hard to assess, especially with how up and down and topsy-turvy the roller coaster that 2020 has been, especially in, as far as the football season is concerned. It's hard to assess a young quarterback who is now making his, what, ninth career start in Grant Wells. Mm-hmm. But he has not played a great last eight quarters of football. There was a point in time in this game, Joe, in which he was 0-for-9. I believe he didn't get his first completion until the third quarter. May have been early or late second quarter, but he definitely started the game 0-for-9, if my memory serves me correct, before he got the long touchdown to Xavier Gaines. And to be honest, this game wasn't even as close as the score may indicate, because, you know, you get that one 70-yard touchdown, I believe it was, to Gaines. It's a big tight end. Outside of that, couldn't really get the running game going, and Brandon Knox had some success, 17 carries for 67 yards. But once UAB was, you know, up 9-0, and it felt like Marshall, at some point in time, the game was there for them and to take in the first half. And once they went into halftime with that 9-0 deficit, if you're a UAB fan and if you're a Blazer on that team, you had to feel like you had all the momentum going to Huntington and playing that game. So that's the first thing. The second thing, that to come back to UAB, I tweeted this during the game. One, this felt like a return of old school Spencer Brown, right? After last year, you know, he was banged up a little bit, had the I believe it was a hamstring or maybe a groin injury he had, and he dropped the weight this year and came back and looked great. But this was old school Spencer Brown, 30 carries, a buck 49. If you remember correctly, you know, during his first, his freshman and sophomore year, Spencer Brown was always among the league leaders in carries, you know, for Conference USA. So nice to see him, you know, kind of jump back in there and go old school. And then Tyler Johnston, it's what you expect from the UAB offense in terms of not necessarily the highest completion percentage, but they're going to throw the ball downfield and they're going to have some receiver who's going to make big plays. And Trey Shropshire, hopefully I'm getting that last name correctly. Myron Mitchell opts out. You know, you don't have guys like Austin Watkins. You don't have those deep threats, right? And you wonder who's going to be the next guy. Trey Shropshire, a guy who coming into this game only had, if memory serves me correct, 9 catches for, you know, something like 120, 130 yards. He comes in and he's the big play guy, right? So that's just a staple of UAB's offense. And credit Bill Clark. They get the job done for the second time in 4 years. They win Conference USA. And I'll toss it back to you on this. And I am not out here to be the guy who's going to critique Doc Holliday. But I did see some frustration amongst the Marshall fan base and some just a broader Conference USA spectators as a whole, saying that this is just another year that Marshall, it looks like it's full steam ahead or full speed ahead. The train is, you know, got full steam and they're heading in the right direction. And they kind of, you know, can't put it all together at the end of the year. And I don't know. If you're a Marshall fan, do you view this year as a disappointment, given the way you started? Me personally, I look at the schedule that Marshall played, and I say, I'm not saying it was all smoke and mirrors. There were a lot of good things that happened in the first 7 games of the year. You know, you beat an App State team, and that's obviously a good win. You beat FAU, even though FAU was depleted. But you can't help but feel like this year is a little bit empty. It reminds me of, you know, covering FIU the 2018 year when – going down to the stretch, the last 3-4 ball games of the year, they had a chance to clinch Conference USA. At home in the Shula Bowl against FAU, things fall apart. Have a chance to clinch it at home, season finale against Marshall, things fall apart. And it just felt like while the team set a program record for wins, it felt like you look at that year more through the prism, of what could have been. And I think this is the way, if you're a Marshall fan, I can't blame them for feeling that way if that's the way they do.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it like this. I think they're definitely headed in the right direction as far as, like, you look at how they were able to develop Brendan Knox and the fact that they were able to get a guy like Grant Wells, and I'll get to his kind of, you know, his last couple of weeks in a second. But, I mean, sure. I can understand the disappointment, but I wouldn't get too – you know, down on Doc Holliday if I'm a Marshall fan, just because I think he definitely has I think he has what you're looking for in a college coach in terms of taking in a player and then by the end of their career making them much, much better. But obviously, given how good Marshall looked at the beginning of this year, and then you look at these last 2 games, it's hard not to be frustrated. I mean, Grant Wells is a young guy, and we saw him, like you said, play a really bad 8 quarters of football the last 2 weeks. So I'll just say this. This is a definitive moment for him in his playing career. You know, you no longer have that, like, oh, he's just a freshman, he'll pick it up moment. You have to go into this offseason and realize you're the guy. You have to, you know, defend your spot and just make sure that you do everything in your power to be what people expected of a QB1 at the D1 level, because the last 2 games he hasn't performed as such. But no, I can definitely understand where people are coming from as far as the disappointment. But in terms of Doc Holliday and the coaching staff, I don't think this is the time to overreact personally.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, from, you know, closing this podcast with me for the past 3 years now, 3 seasons, I'm never going to be the one who's going to call for a coach's head. That's just not particularly my style. I think this is definitely overreaction season, right? You know, you can look at a certain fan base up the road in Orlando and say that they're ready to, you know, bring pitchforks to the stadium over there. But this is the thing, right? So you look at Marshall from 2013 to 2015, 10-4, 13-1, 10-3. I think that... I hate to call a fan base spoiled, because I do think it's fair to expect the best, right? To expect the most out of your team. And once you've seen those heights, I think it's fair to expect that those things can come back around, especially if you feel the team is talented enough to do so. But in my mind personally, I hope this isn't an insult. I look at Marshall 8-5, 9-4, 8-5, as being indicative of what the program is, with the occasional 10-11 win season. And I just, I don't know. You know, Joe, you let me know. And I'm going to touch on your Grant Wells point after this. But you let me know if that is being short-sighted as a fan. Because I guess I look at, I hope I'm not accepting mediocrity, but I'd take 9 wins a year and, you know, being right there in contention for the Conference USA title. That's, again, that's not to say that, you know, that double digit win year or being 13-1 isn't what you overall want for as like, you know, the broader goal. But I don't know. I mean, you let me know. I'm kind of rambling here, but you let me know if I'm being short-sighted.
I don't think so. I think there are G5 fan bases all over the country who would kill for that kind of consistency. I mean, trophies or no, the fact that you are consistently getting into positions to win conference championships and marquee bowl games is nothing to shake a stick at. Of course, they'd like to, you know, win those key games more often. But like you said, if you're getting to the point where you're having double digit win seasons on a fairly consistent basis at this level of football, that's pretty much the highest you can hope for.
Right, right. So, I mean, it sounds like both you and I are kind of the same page here. And quickly to touch on your Grant Wells point, I couldn't agree with you more. I think this will be kind of that turning point situation where I hate to, you know, use a bunch of UCF analogies, but I remember Mackenzie Milton, his freshman year, the team goes 6-7. They actually play in the Cure Bowl in UCF's old home stadium of the Citrus Bowl, or Camping World Stadium, I believe it's called now. And the team loses against Arkansas State, right? And there were fans who booed Mackenzie Milton and UCF off the field that game. And he even talked about it in his recent, you know, kind of release as he went to now transfer to Florida State. He said, hey, I remember that. And not that he is holding it against UCF fans, but it was kind of that moment where it's like, okay, am I going to be good, or this is going to motivate me to be great? And I'm not saying that Grant Wells will turn to Mackenzie Milton. I don't think very many quarterbacks can turn to the heights that he had. But this can kind of be that moment where you look back and say, hey, my last 8 quarters that football weren't great in a year that we had a chance to contend for a conference championship, and turn it around and be that Rakim Cato, you know, type of guy who set all kinds of records at Marshall. So definitely think that could be a situation. And I look for him to, you know, this kind of be a motivating factor for him going to 2021.
Yeah, no, that's a solid point as well. So at the end of the day, Marshall left to fix some things before their bowl game against Buffalo, which we will get into later in the show. But once again, congrats to Bill Clark and his team on securing yet another CUSA title. Had one other game happen in between now and our last recording, and that was the Myrtle Beach Bowl. Weird to believe that, like, we've already had bowl games being right, played, yeah. But I guess that's just I guess that's just an effect of 2020, because we would of course be seeing bowl games played at this time, but it just doesn't even feel like it just obviously with the end of the season being delayed, it's weird that we're jumping right into it so quick, but I digress. In the Myrtle Beach Bowl, we had North Texas and App State going head-to-head, and App State came out victorious 56-28. On the North Texas side, Jason Bean, 21 of 36 for 251 yards and 2 touchdowns. In that game for North Texas, they were, of course, without 2 key players in Deontay Simpson and DeAndre Torrey. They skipped that one, presumably to focus on what's next for them in their football careers. But, you know, if you're North Texas, I mean, obviously, like, I think the fact that they were able to put up 28 points on a pretty good App State team is certainly something to be happy about. But also, like, I think the fact that App State put up 56 on them is pretty indicative of what that defense has been all year.
There you go. Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there, Joe. It's not necessarily that App State was able to put up the points, right? Not that North Texas was able to put up the points. It's that the run defense for North Texas, and I mean, the defense as a whole has been a work in progress, but giving up 317 rushing yards and 5 touchdowns to Cameron Peoples, that is a lot. And added to that was a 100-yard performance by, I believe it's Marcus Williams. Yeah, Marcus Williams Jr. is the backup running back for App State. So you give up 500 total and 400 via the running backs. You know, that is a lot of yardage that defensive coordinator Clinton Bowen will have to try to address. I mean, there's a reason, you know, he was brought in this year to try to address a situation that Troy Reffert was not able to fix for the 3 years that he was at North Texas. I think that's the big thing. You know, no matter who was missing for the Mean Green, you know, Austin Ani and the guys you mentioned with Deontay Simpson, you know, and DeAndre Torrey, Trey Siggers filled in really nicely, Oscar Attaway as well. But it's the defense. You know, that's something that Joe, really quick, and I'll pass it to you on this one. Mason Fine really covered up a lot of issues defensively in the sense that they were able to outscore teams, right? And I don't think this is a secret. You know, we were so in love with the passing exploits that Mason Fine was able to put up in his career there that maybe the defense kind of got overshadowed in the sense that they weren't necessarily defeating teams as much as they were outscoring teams. And that's something that will have to be addressed. And then again, it's not to say that North Texas doesn't necessarily have the quarterback talent, whether it's Bean or Ani, they've performed pretty well. But if unless you have that Mason Fine guy and you can't ask every quarterback in the world to be able to play at that level, they're not going to win very many games if they're giving up that type of yardage.
Yeah, no, that's a solid point. I mean, the system that North Texas has, it's set up for the offense and the quarterback in particular to be the star of the show. And if you don't have a quarterback who can, you know, live up to what that system expects of them, then that's how you end up with a record that's 4-6. And then of course, like when you have an offense that's as dynamic as North Texas can be when they're playing at their highest level, that demands so much time and energy. It's almost understandable that the defense isn't necessarily, you know, is putting up performances like what we saw against App State, where they're giving up 56 points and several similar games to that throughout the season. So I guess that's kind of my thought to that is, if you're North Texas, you've put yourself in a position where you have to put so much time and energy into the offense for it to be, you know, basically with that system, you have to outscore opponents, because if you're not coaching your defense, you know, the way that you're coaching your offense, then that's how you're going to get these kind of results.
Right. Exactly. No doubt about it. So it's something that I think will be interesting to kind of see how it goes. And it's not going to get any easier when you lose a guy like Dion Noville. I mean, unless he chooses to come back, and we haven't seen any indication that he will. I mean, he's one of the top defensive tackles, top defensive linemen in Conference USA. But unless he chooses to come back and even having him in tow, the defense, especially the run defense, has been an issue. So it definitely be something to see how, you know, Seth Littrell addresses in the offseason and see what they do about that.
Absolutely. Speaking of the offseason, it's going to be the offseason in just a few weeks, and there's already a ton of offseason type news to go through, so we'll get through as much of it as we possibly can. Starting with the Conference USA in review awards for 2020, Coach of the Year is Doc Holliday of Marshall. We talked in depth about kind of the job that he's doing there, so we don't have to dive into him too much, but let's talk about some of the other awards in this class. First of all, CUSA MVP is Jalen Darden. He becomes the second wide receiver to be named CUSA MVP since 2008 when the award was instituted. And he led FBS in receiving touchdowns with 19 in just 9 games and caught at least one touchdown in 10 consecutive games dating all the way back to the 2019 season finale. Eric, you and I have praised Darden quite a bit, in that he just looks like a man amongst boys when he plays. I think this award in particular is well-deserved regardless of North Texas's win-loss record at the end of the year. Also worth mentioning, he's a semifinalist for the Biletnikoff Award and set new UNT records for career receptions and receiving yards, and is the program's new career touchdown leader with 38. So fantastic cap to an astounding career for Jalen Darden at North Texas. They are certainly going to miss him next season.
No doubt about it, Joe. And I think the big thing for me, right, when I looked at Jalen Darden coming into this year, if you remember, Rico Bussey Jr. actually transferred to Hawaii. And he was kind of a guy who I thought, all right, I thought Rico Bussey was the number one receiver on that team. And I'm not, by any means, I'm not shorting Rico Bussey's talent, right? But it just was interesting that, you remember he got injured, he being Rico Bussi, got injured in 2019. And then you think, all right, you're going to get him back in 2020 and things will be back to normal. But no, he chooses to transfer to Hawaii. Jalen Darden is the number one guy and the offense just continues to roll. And this was not a situation where it was just a matter of plug and play at receiver. We've talked about the talent they have, whether it's been Bussi or Jalen Guyton, who's with the Dallas Cowboys, or the other receiver, Michael Lawrence. Yes, that offensive scheme has helped receivers put up a lot of numbers. But Jalen Darden's exploits this year was not a matter of just plug and play at receiver and you're going to put up, you know, 1,000 yards and 80 catches. He was a man amongst boys, as you mentioned. Even at his size, at 5'9", 175, truly, truly a number one receiver, a go-to guy. We'll be interested to see what his NFL exploits hold. And I think the best way I can sum up his impact is what I've said on this podcast throughout the year, especially given some of the teams, you know, up and down quarterback play in Conference USA. The number one quarterback throughout the year may have been Grant Wells until the past few weeks, but the number two or number three quarterback was probably Jalen Darden, you know, because having him, you know, on your team definitely makes your quarterback that much better.
Yeah, I'd say that's a fair assessment. I would say until a few weeks ago, I really expected Grant Wells to be amongst these award winners. He was in an All-Conference USA selection, and he did win Freshman of the Year, but I would have almost put him in the Offensive Player of the Year running had he not had the 2 weeks that he's had. As a result, that award went to UTSA running back Sincere McCormick. He's the first UTSA player to be named the CUSA Offensive Player of the Year. Second in FBS with a school record, 1,345 rushing yards on 226 attempts this season, and has a league-high 11 rushing touchdowns. I think this is a solid pick. I think Sincere was the most consistent offensive player in the league, and I'd almost argue I don't think there was really an offensive player that meant more to his team's success, particularly in the West this year, other than Sincere McCormick.
Joe, I hope I'm not speaking anything into existence, but I sincerely hope that we see Sincere McCormick next year. And for, you know, point of reference, he's a sophomore, which would mean by eligibility, he would be back next year. But, you know, we've seen a lot of running backs, especially those who take the amount of carries that he has, you know, choose to pursue professional exploits. Definitely hope that, you know, he's coming back and ready to finish the job and maybe have UTSA contend for a Conference USA title as a whole in 2021, given how close they were this year, because he is a stud, Joe. I tweeted this out that he was the best running back in the nation that you may not have heard of. And I mean, just, you know, this year, whether it's a buck 97 against Texas State, a buck 50 against a really good UAB defense, you know, three touchdowns against Louisiana Tech, 251 against North Texas. I mean, just a stud. And it's great to see a hometown guy really come there and really help rescue the program. So.
Absolutely. Which brings us to the winner of the Defensive Player of the Year, Marshall senior linebacker Tavante Beckett. Averaged 9.6 tackles a game, had 7.5 tackles for loss, one forced fumble, and then a nation-leading 4 fumble recoveries and a touchdown. Was a two-time Defensive Player of the Week this year. Also was a huge part of what Marshall was able to do in terms of putting them in a position to win a conference title this year. However, bad news for the program as he is going to skip the bowl game to focus on the NFL draft, which after this news, you kind of don't blame him with all the good press and momentum heading his way.
Oh, no, most definitely. And listen, I want to say this right now. Pound for pound, Tavante Beckett may be the best player in Conference USA. When you talk about a guy at his size, who's about, you know, 5'10", 5'11", 205, 210 pounds playing linebacker, that's incredible. And huge fan of you know, what he's been able to do throughout his entire career. I will say this, Joe. This was the one that was a little bit controversial, especially amongst the FAU faithful. They made their voice known. Mm-hmm. I can't help but see their point. Tavante Beckett, 90 tackles in 9 games, averaged 10 stops per game. And as you mentioned, he had the fumbles recovered and the fumbles forced. But I got to give a shout out to Leighton McCarthy, who led the league in sacks with 12.5 in just 8 games. And also led the, he had 9 sacks in 8 games, had 12.5 tackles for loss, was up there also in fumbles forced and fumbles recovered as well. So that one to me, I thought was a little bit controversial, just in the sense that, and again, for those of you, you know, listeners, this is selected by, these awards are selected by the Conference USA head coaches. So I think that should be noted. But I personally wouldn't have minded seeing that award go to Leighton McCarthy, just based on, again, the amount of sacks and tackles for loss he was able to accumulate in a game fewer, one game fewer than Devontae Beckett. That's something that I thought could have gone up in the air, but, you know, not an egregious pick with Beckett, but I can definitely see those making the case for Leighton McCarthy, who also, you know, can maybe save us a little bit of time as we go over the first and second team awards, was named to the second team in Conference USA. And I thought that was surprising as well, given some of the defensive ends who were selected ahead of him who didn't have nearly as many sacks. But that's just kind of my thoughts on the Defensive Player of the Year award.
I think that all makes sense, and I think FAU fans definitely have a solid point there. And it's already kind of – it's been a weird few weeks for FAU with everything Corona-related and them really not getting the amount of games that I think everybody would have liked to see, and then, of course, the Chris Robinson departure. But as we'll get into later in the show, they definitely have something to be excited about. But first, let's wrap up these awards. We talked about – Marshall quarterback Grant Wells winning a freshman of the year for him, fourth time in 9 years that a Marshall player has won that award. So congrats to him. But we've talked about him quite ad nauseum on just on this episode of the show. So we'll jump into UTSA sophomore punter Lucas Dean winning special teams player of the year. Just the second time a punter has won the award in league history. Dean led CUSA and ranked fourth nationally in punting with a program record 46.3 yard average. You know, I'll tell you, at times this year, this guy was showing shades of Jack Fox at punter there.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, listen, Lucas Dean had a tremendous year, and this year had quite a few, you know, really good punters, whether it was Lucas Dean or Tommy Heatherly. I mean, you had John Haggerty over there at Western Kentucky, Matt Hayball. I mean, Conference USA, whether, like you said, Jack Fox or just some of the other guys who punted throughout the league, always had really good success in terms of the punter. So shout out to Lucas Dean. His 46.3 yard per average was great. And I mean, again, I'll just run down the list. John Haggerty averaged 46 yards per kick. Matt Hayball, Connor Bowler, and Tommy Heatherly at 44 and 45. So solid year. I mean, of course, you don't want to be punting the ball too much, but when the punters were called on, they certainly booted it a long way.
Absolutely. And for Dean anyway, it's something about these Aussie punters, man. They know how to develop that position down there. So with that, let's talk about the newcomer of the year award that goes to Louisiana Tech quarterback Luke Anthony. Anthony, of course, was the grad transfer from Abilene Christian this year, seventh quarterback to win that award in the last 8 years. You know, I think overall kind of a disappointing year for Louisiana Tech as a whole, but I think you got to give it to him for how he was able to, come into, you know, a team that certainly has high expectations for itself and certainly high expectations for that position following, you know, what Jamar Smith was able to do over the course of his career with the Bulldogs. But, you know, in just the 1 year that that Luke Anthony was there, he certainly made his impact on the program.
Yeah, and we'll have to see if he's able to return. As we mentioned last episode, he really suffered a really gruesome ankle injury, so his status for next year is probably going to be in question, just to see how he recovers from that. But this award really is a quarterback award. You know, I mean, most times you're gonna have quarterbacks who transfer in and get a chance to compete for the job immediately, so, you know, great job by him, especially coming from an FCS program there in Abilene Christian. Only other guys I thought really had a decent case was, you know, guys like Tyrell Pigram. If Mike Collins at Rice, you know, 10 touchdowns and I believe the four games they played, if he had a few more games, maybe he's in there. And then, you know, a guy like, oh, come on, it's escaping me right now, the running back from Charlotte who transferred, Trey Harbison from Northern Illinois. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe if they play a few more games, he might have put up some more numbers. But outside of that, it's definitely a quarterback award and well-deserved by Luke Anthony.
Absolutely. Speaking of quarterbacks, let's dive into some transfer news from the past couple of weeks here. Obviously, the big one that we need to talk about and didn't get in on the last episode of the show, MTSU quarterback Asher O'Hara entering the transfer portal. He still has two seasons left, but I don't think we need to really go into a ton of depth about what a huge loss that is for the Blue Raiders, as he was arguably their best player over the last 4 years. A few years, I should say.
Yeah. I mean, arguably, I think you're being, you know, being the gentleman you are, you're being kind. It's not to say that guys like Reed Blankenship and others, Greg Great, aren't phenomenal players, you know, Robert Jones as well. But Asher O'Hara was the best player on that team over the past 2 years. it's a loss for Conference USA, but you know, we've had him on the podcast, friend of the podcast, his father, Les has also listened to the podcast. So, you know, shout out to them, but it's interesting. I think for Middle Tennessee, I'll keep it within the Conference USA realm first. We're going to see what happens, whether it's Chase Cunningham. I believe Mike DeLeo, my memory serves me correct, is the other quarterback on that roster who saw some time this year. We'll have to see what happens there. I'm hearing some rumblings that they may bring in a transfer as well. It's interesting. You know, Joe, Middle Tennessee as a whole hasn't been the best over the past 2 years. 4-8 record last year, and then this record, I don't have their record off the top of my head, but it seemed as if, I don't want to say Asher was kind of holding everything together, but it definitely may be a situation where, you know, if you're Rick Stockstill, maybe you can start fresh and, you know, kind of build the program in a different direction. And for Asher O'Hara, I've seen some people on Twitter say that they don't see why he's leaving. Maybe I'm biased because of, you know, having a chance to see him play a couple times in person. I think he's gonna find a Power Five program that's gonna be the right fit, that runs the offense through him, and he'll excel. You know, so no one's confusing him for Dan Marino or Peyton Manning or Aaron Rodgers by any stretch of the imagination, but he certainly has a phenomenal skill set as a quarterback, and I think he'll flourish in the right system.
I think that's definitely fair. And as we've discussed a lot, his skill set is not the easiest to come by in college football in terms of being as competent a dual threat as he is. But certainly wish him all the best, and will be fascinating to see where he ends up landing. Heading to the other side of the 100 miles of hate, Western Kentucky gets some important transfers added to the program. Houston Baptist wide receiver Jareth Stearns and UNC linebacker Matthew Flint will join the program as grad students coming up here. I'm really in particular excited about Flint. Obviously, we saw some really good things out of North Carolina and that defense in particular this year. And, you know, I think with just people kind of moving on from the program over the last year and a half or so, Western definitely needs depth at the linebacker position just in general. So I think this is going to end up working out pretty well for them.
Yeah, Joe, I'm with you. We'll have to see what happens as far as Kyle Bailey, you know, whether he'll return, and they have had some losses at linebacker over the last few years. I think if you put if you're able to get Jaden Hunter, the transfer from, Georgia, he transferred from Georgia and is still there on that roster outside linebacker, that could be interesting. I believe Roger Cray, if memory serves me correct, was doing a little bit of linebacker work. He transferred out. Someone to watch is Jareth Stearns. He's a receiver from Houston Baptist. And for those who may be, you know, the uninitiated, Houston Baptist had a quarterback by the name of Bailey Zappe who entered the transfer portal. Maybe the best quarterback as far as a non-FBS that you haven't heard of. And they put up a ton of passing yards. And Jareth Stearns, he's someone who I think is going to be kind of fit that role in Houston Baptist as a slot receiver. His numbers last year were something like 43 catches for 400 and something yards and a couple touchdowns. And of course, this is in a abbreviated season. But I really think if he is going to be that guy for Western Kentucky, who can be a slot receiver, with someone can kind of give Tyrell Pigram or whoever is that quarterback a safety blanket, keep an eye on him as well.
Absolutely. It's going to be an interesting offseason for the Tops, that's for sure. This next one, I think, could potentially be the most immediate impact of transfers. Former four-star quarterback Michael Johnson Jr. will transfer from Penn State to FAU. So that definitely adds some intrigue to the offseason for the Owls QB situation. Eric, I got to tell you, this kid was the talk of Oregon high school football a couple of years ago. His dad is an assistant coach for the Ducks. A lot of programs on the West Coast were really hoping to sign him. We're disappointed when he signed with Penn State. Staying on the East Coast, obviously, and add some much needed depth to what Willie Taggart is trying to build with the Owls.
I do not think that this will be the last quarterback addition for Willie Taggart and the Owls. As you mentioned, he was certainly highly regarded coming from the state of Oregon. And my apologies for anyone who listened to the last podcast and heard me say that the only thing that FAU didn't address was a quarterback. They addressed that about 15 minutes right after we finished taping that podcast as far as their recruiting class. So it will be interesting to see. We know the guys who are on the roster in terms of Nick Tronte, will or won't he be back next year? Willie Taggart Jr., Javion Posey there at quarterback, two guys. Obviously, Willie Taggart knows Willie Taggart Jr. pretty well, right? But Javion Posey as well. be interesting to see what direction that offense goes in terms of, are they going to run what Willie Taggart ran at USF as far as the Gulf Coast offense, which is his version of the West Coast offense. It should be interesting, but definitely a much needed pickup for FAU, and do not expect that to be the final quarterback added on the roster.
Solid point. Speaking of quarterbacks, one COSA quarterback that you and I have certainly spent our fair share of time talking about, Jack Abraham. We talked about how he was leaving Southern Miss a few weeks ago. He has found a destination, and that is Mike Leach's team at Mississippi State. I think that should be an interesting situation to watch. I mean, Jack Abraham certainly has the talent, I think, to eventually win that QB1 spot at Southern Miss, kind of depending on what happens there. But, you know, I if you had told me, like, one of a quarterback from CUSA was going to transfer into a P5 team, for some reason, I just didn't see it being Jack Abraham. But I certainly didn't see everything that happened to Southern Miss this year coming 6 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, the situation with Southern Miss, that you couldn't have foreseen, right? But anyone who's listened to this podcast knows that both of us are very big fans of Jack Abraham, and I am interested to see. The one thing I'm paying attention to is Jack Abraham has had multiple coordinators in his time in college, whether it was starting out at Louisiana Tech, then the two coordinators at Southern Miss, and now he'll have to learn a new system. But, Joe, if there's one place that you wouldn't, that you would absolutely, I hope that didn't sound as wouldn't, that you would absolutely want to go to if you are a young college quarterback, it's Mississippi State, right? With Mike Leach, the Mad Bomber, someone who has a great reputation for developing quarterbacks. And I think this has the potential to kind of be a situation like Gardner Minshew, the Jacksonville Jaguars quarterback who spent time at East Carolina before linking up with Mike Leach at Washington State, and we saw what came of his career becoming an NFL draft pick. This may be my own bias here. I think Jack Abraham is every bit as good as Gardner Minshew, if not better, as is already at the similar point in time in each of their careers, excuse me. And I don't see any reason why Jack Abraham can't go in there and win the job and flourish at the quarterback position.
Bold statement on Jack Abraham becoming the next Gardner Minshew, but as long as he's not working out in a jock strap, I'm fine with it. but we'll see what happens. Good addition for Rice coming in over the last week or so with New Mexico wide receiver Trey Patterson heading into that program. You know, we've talked about the Rice offense quite a bit and what Mike Bloomgren's been able to build there, even despite having a really shortened season, even comparatively to a lot of the other teams in FBS this year. But that could potentially be a decent replacement for Austin Trammell when he eventually leaves the program there.
Yeah, whether it's Austin Trammell or, you know, Brad Rosner, whenever he leaves the program, I think it'll be interesting. I definitely think for Rice, if they can accumulate as much of that talent there at the receiver position, it'll help things out, because the big thing for Rice, as we've known, is really the quarterback position, right? Getting that squared away. And they appear to have that done now with Mike Collins. So I think that's a big thing, that if Trey Patterson could come in there and bring them a guy who, quite frankly, you know, a speedster, I think that's going to be the big thing, right? They can get a guy like that who can stretch the field similar to how Rosner can, as being a sizable receiver. Brad Rosner can stretch the field, and a guy like Austin Trammell, who has been able to stretch the field, I think it'll be something that can help Rice out. So, you know, Patterson's a guy who and has played some football. He's appeared in something like 22 or 24 games and has caught some passes in his career. So if he can go out there and stretch the field, I think that'll be a huge addition for Rice.
Absolutely. A couple of important notes out of the Charlotte camp this week. First of all, Charlotte defensive tackle Timmy Horn has entered the transfer portal. Huge loss for the 49ers, not just in terms of size, because Timmy Horn's a big man, but in terms of impact on that defense. As our guy Hunter Bailey pointed out on Twitter, that defensive line unit is going to be really, really young heading into 2021.
One of the most underrated defensive linemen in Conference USA over the past really three seasons has been Timmy Horn. He was a guy, Joe, I looked at coming off his 2019, 41 tackles, 6.5 tackles for loss, 5.5 a sack, especially from that position, which was kind of being that like nose tackle there, you know, in the 3-4 scheme and kind of that multiple scheme that Charlotte would run defensively. whether it was Glenn Spencer or you know, wherever, because he dates back there. Even if you look at his time there in the 2018 with 28 tackles, a sack, and a sack and a half, and a tackle for loss, he's played in multiple different systems there. He's a guy who I thought coming to this year would be one of the top defensive linemen in Conference USA. What really hurt them was the number of games played. Charlotte just didn't play enough games this year, and that probably hurt, or not probably, it did hurt his numbers, and you know, may contribute to the transfer. But I absolutely think overall, you know, really, really good football player, and he won't have any issues. The name that was escaping me was Marcus West. Marcus West and Brandon Cooper have been the defensive coordinators under Will Healy. And of course, I was thinking back of Glenn Spencer the year prior to that. But whichever P5 program picks him up, and I think he absolutely will be a P5 player, getting a really solid pickup there.
Speaking of Charlotte player, or Charlotte members of the Charlotte football program, moving on to P5 opportunities. Charlotte offensive line coach Lee Grimes is expected to take the same job at Kansas, who I guess is a Power 5 team technically. But that's obviously a frustrating loss if you're Will Healy, to lose a guy who, I think really did a really solid job for building a unit that was protecting Chris Reynolds the past couple of years.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And to any Kansas fans who happen to have stumbled upon this podcast, A, we thank you for listening, but B, hey, you guys know what it is, so don't throw your hate mail at us. No, all jokes aside, you know, Lee Grimes is someone who, a lot of experience. I know he briefly played with the Bucks and the Chargers for a little bit, but, you know, someone who was really well-regarded at Texas A&M, spent some time at Minnesota. You know, he's someone who really kind of a you want to give him the cliche label of rising star in the coaching profession, but it's someone who definitely will be on to bigger and better things, quote unquote bigger at Kansas, because I mean, you know, hey, yeah, Kansas, Charlotte, what can you say there? But no, it'll be a decent loss for the Niners, when we have to pay attention to see who they get to fill that role.
For sure. Moving on to some news out of Marshall. Logan Clark entering the transfer portal there, so that's a tough loss for them. But some more immediate losses for the upcoming bowl game against Buffalo. Brendan Knox, Devontae Beckett, and Josh Bell have opted out of that game to focus on the NFL draft.
Yeah, so I think, you know, no surprises as far as really the guys who chose to opt out, especially given, you know, this year in 2020 and some of the circumstances behind it. That one doesn't really surprise me. But the big tight end choosing to transfer out, you know, he was someone who was a three-star JUCO guy. And it's kind of weird to see some of these JUCO guys not work out, in the sense that, I don't know. I mean, I think after 1 year in Logan Clark, again, a three-star prospect, he's there behind Xavier Gaines. Xavier Gaines is going to be heading to the NFL draft. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that. So that one was kind of curious. But as far as the guys who opted out, no real surprises there, because – especially given all the things surrounding COVID-19 and just they're at this point in time, there probably is no real benefit to them playing the bowl game outside of, you know, getting one more run in with their teammates, but not going to begrudge those guys for choosing to pursue their NFL career. So I would say the biggest thing that surprised me there was Logan Clark choosing to transfer, because he was a solid prospect coming out of JUCO.
Yeah, for sure. That one's a little weird, but I guess that's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes in CUSA. Speaking of tough losses, UAB is going to lose another wide receiver in Myron Mitchell as he enters the transfer portal. Of course, Austin Watkins opted out of the remainder of the season a couple weeks back. Didn't impact their mission to win a CUSA title, but they're going to have some rebuilding to do in that receiver unit next year.
Yeah, that one definitely is a tough loss. And as we've mentioned earlier in this podcast about UAB's offense and really kind of the quarterback situation and consistency, and I talked about in the last podcast as far as completion percentage, that offense in terms of the passing game is really boom or bust, right? And for Myron Mitchell, he's kind of a boom guy. You know, someone could stretch the field, had 63 grabs for 990 yards and 7 touchdowns at UAB. Definitely a big-time playmaker. About 6'2", 180, so been intrigued to see where he lands, but he definitely is someone who, you know, whether it's at another FBS program or in terms of the group of five level, has the talent to be a number one guy, or if it's at the, you know, power five level, can fill a role, excuse me, in an offense and be someone who can, you know, definitely secure some catches and stretch the field as well.
Absolutely. And last bit of transfer news for this episode, another wide receiver that could make a significant impact right away. Georgia wide receiver Trey Blount will transfer to Old Dominion. So we haven't done a lot of talking about Old Dominion this year because obviously they didn't play football this fall. But if we're looking at ahead to the Monarchs 2021 season, this could be a very big addition for them and what they're trying to do.
This one was much needed for Ricky Ronnie. When you look at Eric Kuma, the Virginia Tech receiver, who transferred in 2019, played the 2019 season, ended up suffering a season-ending injury. I want to see it was something like a broken hand or something to that effect. My memory could be off there, but he missed most of his first year with Old Dominion, and he chose to pursue an NFL career after this year with ODU choosing to sit out football. So they definitely needed someone at the receiver position for whether it's Hayden Wolf or whoever wins that quarterback job. And, you know, Trey Blount was a big time 4-star prospect at the University of Georgia, was recruited by Alabama and other SEC schools. So be definitely be intriguing to see where he lands.
Absolutely. And to wrap up this section of the show, FIU making the decision to part ways with offensive coordinator Rich Skrosky. Eric, a resident FIU expert, what can you tell us about that move?
Yeah, this is a tough one, Joe. I mean, yeah, I will go ahead and just confess my, you know, quote-unquote bias up front, right? Coach Skrosky is someone I've gotten to know really well over the, you know, 3 seasons I've been covering FIU. Really a bluntly honest coach, Joe, in the sense that he was always willing to talk, you know, very candidly about his offense. And I'm not saying he was giving away state secrets or anything like that. I don't want to, you know, imply that he was talking about things that shouldn't have been talking about, you know, to someone who works in the media, right? But was absolutely someone who would sit down and have a genuine, honest conversation about his offense and philosophies and you know, the reason for his quarterback. And it never felt when you were talking to Coach Skrosky as if you were getting spent, right? You know, you always felt as if you were getting a genuine conversation. And most of all, you were learning something that you didn't know prior. So as I tweeted out, he's really one of the good guys in the coaching profession. You know, he'll land on his feet. He's had head coaching stops at Elon and other schools and is really a vet. So, you know, sucks to lose your job, especially around the holidays this time of year. But Coach Skrosky is a good guy and he'll land on his feet. And, you know, really, really a really great guy and a really good coach.
Absolutely. Hopefully he finds something sooner rather than later. With that, let's talk about some upcoming bowl games within CUSA. Eric, as we're recording this, we have one going on right now, but I was on the fence of whether or not we were even going to talk about it, because right now Georgia Southern is just putting it to Louisiana Tech 21-0 in the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl. It's still the second quarter, so definitely time for the Bulldogs to turn it around, but as of now, looking like they're having some trouble defending that triple option.
You and I talked about it when FAU played Georgia Southern. It is a matter of, man, it's so hard to prepare for an offense that you're only going to see, Joe, maybe once a year, depending on who you play. You know, if you schedule a triple option team, maybe once every 2 or 3 years. And it comes down to, you have to tackle them at the line of scrimmage. You got to have perfect fundamentals. You got to be in there, fill your gaps in the right spots, because if you don't play everything consistently, you're going to give up 100 yards easily to maybe multiple running backs. And especially them getting Shai Wirtz back, who feels like he's been at Georgia Southern for like 10 years, you know, getting really the head man who can run that system just to its peak performance. Yeah, you know, it's a tough sledding for Louisiana Tech. And also the other thing, if you get down 21-0, Joe, you're not going to have many, you know, enough possessions to come back, because each Georgia Southern drive is going to be 10, 12 minutes. So, yeah, by the time we finish recording this one I definitely think that, sorry, Tech fans, I think this one will be in the books. Georgia Southern kind of really, really hard to come back from a 21-0 deficit against that type of offense.
Margin for error is so slim against teams that run the triple option well, and we're kind of seeing evidence of that right now. So we'll see how that one turns out in terms of a final score. Also later tonight, Wednesday, December 23rd at 7 Eastern on ESPN, we have FAU playing Memphis in the Montgomery Bowl. Tigers favored by 8.5 heading into that one. If you haven't watched Memphis play this year, Brady White more or less up to some of the stuff that we saw him do last year. 26 touchdowns, well over 3,000 yards so far. So this offense, as our guy Joe Brobeck can tell you, is nothing to take lightly for sure. So FAU has their work cut out for them. I'm going to pick Memphis, but I'm curious to see what FAU does under the bright lights here.
This is a game I'm really interested to see because, as I've mentioned, you know, whether it's been this podcast or other places, when you talk about Memphis football, you're talking about, quote unquote, the cream of the crop as far as group of five teams and a program that, quite frankly, you wouldn't have many CUSA teams wouldn't have the opportunity to face, right? You know, whether it's been them or UCF or Cincinnati, they've been in the conversation for the New Year Six bowl bid as far as the group of five teams. So definitely intrigued to see how FAU stacks up. And I think if you're an FAU fan, this will be a nice, if you're able to get the win, could be a nice little feather in your cap heading into 2021, seeing how you weren't able to win Conference USA or even contend for the title game, but are playing the title of the game, excuse me. So definitely want to see what happens there. Brady White, as you mentioned, he's been playing college football since I think you and I both were in college, is now completing his doctorate at Memphis. So be interested to see. Also have to see, you know, how they're going to compete against guys like Calvin Austin, because he really is a game-breaking receiver at 60 grabs for 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns. They don't have DeMonte Cox, who chose to opt out. They don't have Kenny Gainwell, chose to opt out, and that kind of levels the playing field for FAU. But definitely want to see you. Again, this is a matchup that I think you have to be salivating if you're an FAU fan and an owl on that team, because you wouldn't have a chance to play Memphis otherwise, you know, or at least a team the caliber of Memphis otherwise. So definitely intrigued to see how this matchup plays out tonight.
For sure. And then on Friday, we've talked about it a little bit, but Buffalo playing Marshall in the Camellia Bowl, Buffalo favored by 4.5 heading into that one. Look, if you haven't watched Jarrett Patterson play yet, the running back for Buffalo, he is really something. 141 carries this season with 172 yards, or rather 1,072 yards and 19 touchdowns. So recommend tuning into this one. I do think if Grant Wells can kind of turn around what he's been able to do, they're going to keep this one close, just like they did in the CUSA title game. But, you know, ultimately, I think Buffalo is a little bit more of a consistent team. But it wouldn't surprise me if Marshall won this game, but I'm still going to pick Buffalo.
Joe, the big thing that you undersold about Jarrett Patterson's numbers, those came in six games. Let's make sure that's clear. That was not in, you know, a 10, 11, 12 game year, as the MAC did play an abbreviated season. That's the big thing. And if you haven't seen Jarrett Patterson play, I don't know how you haven't after his 8 touchdown performance the other week or whichever. I think it was about 2 weeks ago. That is what I'm interested to see. And hopefully we don't jinx it by talking about it now that he does play, because there was some speculation as far as him dealing with a knee injury. And of course, he'll be pursuing his pro career, you would think, after this year, that he may choose to opt out of this game. So hopefully you do see him. But for Marshall, yeah, this is one would be, again, I don't want to say it'll shake off the final two losses of the year, but I think if you can come back and beat a really, really solid Buffalo team, that will help things go into the offseason. Now, if you lose, then, you know, you're probably those Marshall fans who feel the way that I, you know, mentioned earlier in the podcast about this year being really unsatisfying. They're going to have more gas to, you know, to add to the flames as far as that feeling. But I think for Grant Wells and you know, the rest of the Marshall team that is there, it's going to be tough, especially them not having Beckett and Knox. But it gives them something to play for, wanting to A, avenge the two losses, and B, show that they can be a solid team without Beckett and Knox. I'm going to go with Buffalo, but I'm intrigued to see what Marshall will do.
For sure. If I didn't say so already, you can catch the one at ESPN at 2:30 on Christmas Day. And then Georgia State hosting Western Kentucky on Saturday. Well, hosting, quote unquote, in the Lending Tree Bowl in Mobile, 3:30 Eastern on ESPN. Georgia State favored by 3.5. Here's the thing. I am going to pick the Tops. I like the momentum that they've been able to build so far this season. I haven't really seen anything from Georgia State in the 9 games that they played that make me think that they are, you know, deserving of being favored in this game, if I'm being honest. But I do think Western, now that they've actually had some time to heal and hopefully figure some things out on the defensive side of the ball, that they can win this game.
I'm with you, and this isn't shorting Western Kentucky by any stretch of imagination, although they've played really good football over the past couple of weeks. I was surprised that they were just clearly favored. I would have thought maybe, you know, a 1-point favorite, if that, or, you know, maybe being an underdog. for Georgia State, they have a really good quarterback in Cornelius Brown. He's the, you know, I think the big thing with him, nickname is Quad because he's Cornelius Brown the fourth. But Joe, when you watch this game, and I know you will, being a resident Western Kentucky guy, you're going to look at Cornelius Brown, and the first name that's going to come to mind is Vince Young. Not, and I don't want to say that he is the next Vince Young because he's a redshirt freshman. Don't want to put that level of, you know, pressure on him. But he's 6'6", 205 pounds, tall, lanky, looks, runs, throws just like Vince Young. Can definitely an athletic guy, you know, a guy who's from Birmingham, Alabama, so a Southerner down there choosing to, you know, kind of get things started at Georgia State. So that'll be the player to keep an eye on. All in all, I am a little bit leaning towards Georgia State, but it wouldn't shock me if Western Kentucky can keep it close. I just think that, you know, Georgia State, for me personally, I think they're coming to this one playing just a little bit better football and a little bit better team, quite frankly.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Rounding out the bowl schedule as of now, unlikely that we'll get any more CUSA bowl games added, but you never know. UTSA and number 19 Louisiana in the Surf Pro First Responder Bowl. Raging Cajuns favored by 13.5 headed into this one. Look, I mean, I think this is going to be one more stage for Sincere McCormick this year to kind of build his resume, as well as, you know, Jeff Traylor to show how far he's taken this program. Here's the problem. The Raging Cajuns are really, really good. They were very close to sneaking into the New Year's Six conversation, which is, you know, a topic that you should go listen to the Sun Belt podcast to hear more about. But this is a really good team, so I think they're going to win this game against UTSA.
Man, this is one that's going to be tough. They have, they being Louisiana, the Raging Cajuns, don't want any more, you know, issues with naming as far as teams are concerned. they have a really good quarterback in Levi Lewis, right? And that is he's one of the top playmakers in the entire nation. As you mentioned, they are number 16 in the AP poll for a reason. Definitely intrigued to see how Sincere McCormick and especially that UTSA defense, guys like Trevor Harmonson and Rashad Wisdom, can stack up. But they have playmakers all across the field. Elijah Mitchell, Trey Ragus, you know, Levi Lewis again, as I mentioned. So definitely intrigued to see what is going to happen there. And their head coach, Billy Napier, it appears that he's committed to staying at Louisiana. So that's going to give them a nice boost heading into the First Responder Bowl. So provided that game, you know, fingers crossed, knock on wood, we don't have any issues there like we did, unfortunately, with UAB's bowl game that won't be played against South Carolina due to South Carolina's COVID issues. Hopefully we get this one in. And I think it'd be a competitive game, but give me Louisiana as well.
With that, let's start wrapping up this episode of the show. Once again, thank you all so much for listening this year and bearing with us in what has been the strangest college football season, hopefully, of our lifetime. I really don't want to deal with this again in 2020-21, but we'll see. Of course, if you want to check out more G5 football content, underdogdynasty.com is the site. If you want to follow Eric and myself on Twitter, I'm at @JOEHIO_. Eric is at @EricCHenry_. And then, of course, at Underdog Dynasty on Twitter to follow the site's main account and maybe even hear some commentary on the bowl games from us or some of our other counterparts on the site there. But until we meet again, have a very Merry Christmas. Happy holidays all around. And we will talk to you very, very soon. Happy holidays, everybody. Happy football watching.